Our last reading rounded out our consideration of the Church's magisterial teaching on the Trinity. We looked at the magisterial text and also some evidences from liturgical tradition. Those things are what we must believe. But belief involves understanding what it is you've been told to believe, right? The mind has to actually take the words in and think about them somehow. And here is where St. Thomas enters in. St. Thomas is going to give us not simply what the Church has taught. He's going to give us a theoretical account of how to think about what the Church has taught, right? So we can say that, you know, the Church's teaching can be summed up in these, you know, X number of propositions, but those propositions have to play out in our heads somehow. How can we make sense of how to put all those propositions together? How can we answer perhaps some of the philosophical difficulties that we may have? Well, St. Thomas is going to offer us a speculative theological account of how one might think about the doctrine of the Trinity. And as he does this, we need to be watching out for two things at least. Obviously, any account you are going to give of how to think about the Trinity needs to mesh well with what the Church has taught, right? But better than that, it needs to not just be compatible. If it's going to be a truly compelling theory of how to teach about the Trinity, the theory has to kind of predict or conclude to the Church's teaching, right? Yeah, the theory has to be such that, yeah, if this theory is true, then it will follow that the Church's teaching is true. Not just that the two could coexist, but that the Church's teachings would actually be logically entailed by your theory. That's the first thing you're looking for. Now, the second thing you're looking for, since this is all about what God has revealed, is you're looking to see if this theory fits the language of the Bible, right? And by that, I mean not just that it fits the language of the Bible in as much as it jives well with the Church's magisterial interpretation of Scripture, but that given this theory, can you explain why God uses the wording he does in Scripture? Will your theory predict what kind of phrasing, what kind of terms God might choose to talk about this mystery? So we need to be watching St. Thomas's theory for success on both of those fronts as he takes us through it. Now, I have added to your compendium reading the body of an article from the Summa Theologiae, where St. Thomas is explicit about something he doesn't mention right away in our reading from the compendium. That is that you cannot discover the mystery of the Trinity by revelation. Now, a few chapters ago, this is long ago now that we read it, but a few chapters ago in the compendium, St. Thomas did say that we've done all the stuff the philosophers were able to discover, now onto the stuff that they couldn't. But in the Summa, he's even clearer that it's not just that people didn't happen to reason their way to the Trinity, but that in principle one cannot reason to the Trinity. I want to say a few things about his case there. We'll talk about what his case is in class, but I want to make some observations around it. First off, notice that he is giving an argument to show that the Trinity is mysterious, right? He's not just playing the mystery card. He's actually arguing that reason itself would tell you that if this mystery is true, then it's inaccessible to reason. Right? And that's a neat move. So when you find yourself confronted by mystery, of course, you'll never get that sort of satisfying feeling you get from understanding something, from getting down to the bottom of things, right? But the next best thing to understanding is understanding why you can't understand. And I think that It's a great habit to have in theology. When you encounter a mystery, don't just say, oh, mysterious. See if you can locate exactly why there's a mystery. Make the case for why this is the kind of thing that reason will not be able to discover or comprehend. So that's observation number one, that St. Thomas is making a move here that seems to me fundamental for theology. Observation number two has to do with a phrase that St. Thomas uses towards the end of his discussion. He says that for those who don't share with us revelation, you know, obviously we can't argue for the truth of the Trinity in a positive way, but he says we can show that it's not impossible. I want to qualify that, and in keeping with the mind of St. Thomas, I want to sort of amplify what he's saying there. There is no argument that will simply show once and for all time that the doctrine of the Trinity is not impossible, right? That this could be true, right? Because God being pure act, there is no potency in him. Anything that can be true in God is true. So if you could show that the Trinity is a real possibility, then you would be showing that it's a real actuality, given that we're talking about God. So if you can't show that the Trinity is true by reason, neither by reason can you give a general demonstration that it is possible. What you can do is encounter objections one by one as they are raised and show that this objection doesn't work and the next objection doesn't work and so on, taking them on a case-by-case basis. It will always turn out that the argument someone brings against the doctrine of the Trinity doesn't work because, in fact, the doctrine of the Trinity is true. And we can do that case by case. And what will happen is a given individual may only have four arguments against the Trinity in his own mind, and you can take each one of those four and show that all of them don't follow. And so then as far as he's concerned, he's satisfied that the Trinity is possible. But you cannot give a universal proof to show that the doctrine of the Trinity is possible. That's not what St. Thomas is saying. Now we turn to the compendium reading, and right away in chapter 37, we hit an interesting dilemma. St. Thomas appears to give a straightforward philosophical argument to show that there is a second person in the Trinity, to show that there is a word proceeding from the Father. He doesn't breathe anywhere a hint of how this is not working by reason. But since you know that St. Thomas thinks this conclusion cannot be shown by reason, then you also know that somewhere in chapter 37 of the compendium, there is a step that St. Thomas thinks is not from reason alone. Somewhere in that chapter is hidden a step that you can only take by revelation. Here's my challenge to you. Find that step. See if you can locate it. Okay, last note about the reading. I found a translation error in chapter 39. Okay, this is in the first sentence of chapter 39. I'd like you to get out a pen and change your book. Okay? I have some fear that maybe this is an error I introduced at some point. I can't recall. Your book says this. I'm sorry, it's the second sentence of chapter 39. Your book says, "For since that which is conceived in the intellect is a likeness of the thing understood, representing its species, it seems to be a certain offspring of the intellect itself." All right, I want you to change it to say this. Okay, look at your book, follow along with me if you can, and change the wording to this. "For since that which is conceived in the intellect is a likeness of the thing understood, representing its species," it's all the same up to this point. Okay, here's where we're going to differ. "It seems to be a kind of offspring of the thing understood." Okay, again, the last clause of the second sentence of chapter 39. "It seems to be a kind of offspring of the thing understood." Please edit your text to say that as you do the reading.